All right. So, roll call, please.
Mr. Hartzell?
Here.
Commissioner First?
Here.
Commissioner DiGiovanni?
Here.
Commissioner Borstein?
Yes, ma'am.
And Commissioner Gaffney?
Here.
Thank you.
All right. We now have the open period for public participation. Is there anyone in the audience who would like to address us on matters not on our jurisdiction, not on our agenda, but within the purview of our jurisdiction? But I think you want to address us.
Thank you, Chair Hartzell. So, you know, we've been recruiting for a few new employees, and we've had, you know, three successful recruitments, and two of the new employees are in the audience. So I'd like to introduce them to you all, since we have a nice 4 o'clock board meeting and they're still at work here. So first is Mark Okamore. He is our new lab director, started, what, January 21st, was it?
Yes, sir.
And Mark comes from the Napa Sanitation District, where he spent many years as their laboratory director, then as their regulatory compliance manager. And he's doing great work already for us. So
was January 20th the day that we hit 120 million gallons here?
I was not aware of that until I walked in the front door.
And then it was a scramble.
You were swept in the front door. Welcome.
And then also here is Katie Thielen, and she is our it's a new position. It's our health and safety manager, which is a position we share with the Novato Sanitary District through our safety director program agreement. And Katie started on Monday.
Now, Katie, you were with Novato before?
I was with the city of Santa Rosa Water.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. So if we have an ache or pain, can we come and see you?
Perhaps.
Welcome again.
And then yesterday, our new admin services manager, Ken Spray, signed his employment agreement, and he'll be starting on Monday. And Ken is a former CMSA employee. He was hired 1 year before me back in 1992 and left in 1999, and he was the Vallejo Sanitation District's finance director for many years. So he's coming back to CMSA. And that's all I have is a public comments.
All right. So the first item, or the next item on the agenda, is the consent calendar. And it is A through K. I should know how many items that is. I know that one of them, a member here, will not be able to vote on because you weren't present for the meeting on January 10th. So if we want to take A first and have those who would agree to move its approval, I'll entertain the motion.
I move to approve the minutes. Item number A.
Second by someone?
I'll second.
I wasn't here either.
Oh, you were in
Egypt.
Egypt, okay.
Everybody's somewhere fabulous.
Oh, well, can three of us approve the minutes, or do we need to wait?
It needs to be four.
So okay, so let's move on to B through K. Oh, wait, you weren't here? You weren't here. No, these are other things.
Oh, I think that's...
Would you be inclined to approve the minutes of the meeting of January 10th?
I would, in fact.
All right. Well, we've had a motion and a second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Excellent. Now let's do B through K.
I'll move B through K.
I'd like to discuss I.
All right.
With the exception of I.
Well, let's just see if we can discuss it quickly, and then we can go on with the whole thing.
Well, Michael and I meet with Jason before, and it's really useful to us. And I is the permitted investments. And what I was thinking is that, and this happens a lot. This happens a lot. I think too many things are permitted. You know, things that we're never going to invest in, and I don't know why we list them, because we're a very highly rated district, double A or so, and so the rule should be that we shouldn't invest in anything below our grade. And if you go to things like banker's acceptances and commercial paper and repurchase agreements, which we're never going to do, I think we ought not to allow them. And so, and I also think we ought to put in our policy no investment allowed below the CMSA's rating. And so Jason and Michael and I talked about this yesterday, and I think we a good idea would be to wait for the new person, Sprague, who's, I think, experienced in this, and maybe delay this one. If that's
Is that going to cause any problem with keeping the old one? Does it expire and we need something in the interim, or is it...
Well, you know, the government code essentially says that since the board delegates authority to somebody to handle agency investments, that each year they have to come back and they have to adopt the investment policy or make modifications or changes to it. So typically we do this at the March meeting. I don't think anybody's tracking it, so if we did it in April, we could do that. Or alternately, we could approve it as is tonight, that we're in compliance with the government code, and we could bring this back to... We could bring it back to the April meeting and consider some changes and modifications to it.
Or May meeting or whatever. Okay.
Exactly.
Yeah, would that be all right?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. So let's...
You know, I have another point, too, and that is the resolution says that the board appoints the treasurer, and I think that all of these things... I can't find it right now. The board, the manager works for us, and we should appoint the general manager to do it, and then he can, or his designee.
Which matter was this on the consent?
The board of commissioners shall delegate.
No, is this still in I?
It's still I.
Yeah.
Oh, well, okay, but we'll have that conversation. We'll have a complete conversation subsequently.
Fine with me.
Well, okay.
And in order to have a complete conversation, shouldn't the finance party, finance committee, and maybe kind of council look at... I mean, if you want to make changes to this is kind of a big deal.
Yeah.
Well, and we're looking actually towards having a meeting of the finance committee sometime around April 24th. So we can put this off for a couple of months and have it be part of what we talk about.
We can pass it now and then look at it.
So let's act on B through K.
I have so moved.
And do we have a second to...
All second.
All right. All those in favor of consent calendars B through K?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. It is unanimous.
Great. Thank you. So it's quite crazy. So what we'll do is... When the new admin services manager starts, I'll work with him in regards to looking at the policy a little clearer, getting his feedback. I noted some of Commissioner Gaffney's, you know, comments and recommended changes from our meeting yesterday. We'll address those also. Then we'll bring that to the Finance Committee at our to-be-scheduled meeting in later April. Then we'll bring some recommended changes to the board, possibly at the May meeting.
Sounds like an appropriate plan. All right. Item number 5, Maintenance Facility Modification Project Construction Contract Award, CMSA Contract Number 1706. Jason.
Thank you, Chair Hartzell. So this is a construction contract for making modifications to our existing maintenance building. And we've talked about this several times in the past. It was a major capital project for the agency over the last couple of years. And, you know, the design was completed by FME Architecture and Design out of San Francisco last summer. In around the September timeframe, the board, you know, approved the construction contract documents and authorized us to put those out to public bid. The scope of work of the project, there's three main elements to it. The first element is doing some remodeling work at both ends of the maintenance building, and that's kind of shown in this little diagram here on page 2. So it's, you know, adding additional office spaces at the west end of the building. There's a mezzanine that's not really used above that. So it's building a staircase and creating office spaces up there. So we'll have a lot more office space. Then at the east end of the building, there's an open area that has a roof structure above it. It's on the pile supported slab. It's filling that in and creating more storage space. And also there's a male and female restroom right now. And neither of those are compliant with accessibility requirements of the ADA or the state FEHA. So we're going to be modifying those two bathrooms into one bathroom that's ADA compliant. The second, that's most of the work. The second part of the project is building a small pile-supported metal building at the east end of the plant by the Sir Francis Drake, 580 on-ramp and off-ramp. And that's just for additional storage for a lot of materials and supplies that you would see sitting out there if you're driving on 580 and happen to look at the end of the plant. Then the last component of the work is doing some grading, modifications between the administration building and the maintenance building, where the clay soils have consolidated, about 3 or 4 feet since the facility was constructed back in 1985. So if you go up this back door, it's a pretty steep slope down, to the level ground. So it's kind of, modifying the slopes there so we're in compliance with ADA and having, just better access overall into both of the buildings. So that's a scope of work. And so we went out to bid, open bids, reported the bid opening at the November meeting. You probably remember that. And we only received one bid, which we were surprised by. And that bid was, several $100,000 over, like $500,000 or $600,000 over the designer's, estimate for the probable construction cost. And, our engineering staff did check in with all of the general contractors that attended the pre-bid tour and just asked, well, why didn't you guys bid on the project? You were here. And there were several comments, one being that they were all pretty busy at the time. But more importantly, they said that the one metal building manufacturer that we listed in the specifications, we have to list, equipment manufacturers and put or equals. We only had one manufacturer listed, and they all checked in with that metal building manufacturer, and they were too busy, and they weren't going to provide quotes or firm numbers to the generals to include in their bid. So they just didn't bid because of that, and they're busy. So staff recommended and the board approved that we just reject the one bid, and then we rebid this at the beginning of the year because the contractor said that they would probably have a little more time. That's a better time for them to bid because then the construction season is coming up in the springtime. So we did that, and we had another successful pre-bid tour. Lots of contractors and others attended it, and we received 6 bids, which was great. We were happy about that. And you see that the low bid is about $445,000 less than the November's low bid. So the delay was great, and our staff did check in with 3 or 4 metal building manufacturers, and we actually added those also to the specifications so the contractors can check with more than just one. And they all committed to, taking our job seriously, providing, cost estimates to the general contractors. And what we also learned is that the metal building manufacturers just won't sell the building to, like, CMSA, because we talked about that back in November, then we could, provide it, to the contractor, or we could have it as a separate project. What they do is they have their own groups of contractors that assemble their buildings. So the general would then hire one of their building manufacturers as a sub who would buy the building from the manufacturer. So we learned a lot through the process. But the good news is that we got a lot of bids, and the low bid is $1,015,000 from Bueller Commercial. And you might recognize that name because they were awarded the Solids Handling Building Ventilation Improvement Project at the January meeting. So they started to mobilize for that project and started delivering materials and supplies on site. Okay, so staff's recommendation is to award the construction contract to Bueller and authorize me to sign the
agreement. Are there any questions?
So the delay resulted in $400,000. I'm sorry. I'm sorry.
Oh, I was just thinking, how many square feet are we talking for the modifications to the existing building, and then how big is the new building?
Well, those are good questions. I don't have, that the square footage information with me. The new building, it's probably the size of this space right here. Okay. The new little building that's going to be. And it's, metal building with 2 big roll-up doors, and it's going to be on a concrete, reinforced concrete slab, and
piles.
No, not on piles.
Oh, I thought you said that had to be on piles.
That's at the far end of the plant. There's a lot of rock out there.
Oh, okay. It's so the expansion to the existing the shops. And
that's already on piles. Yeah,
those
where we're
been.
Filling in. Okay. So that's about this size here, and those 2 green areas. Yeah, I don't have a good sense. I could send you an email with that information though.
I was just always doing a calculation of cost per square foot in my brain.
Oh, okay.
To see just sort of what construction costs are going for on the administrative facilities or maintenance facilities and stuff. See, the buildings look a little small and $1 million, you know, sort of where we are in construction costs and stuff. Okay. But the competitive bidding went really well the second time, and it was good to see the prices come down.
Yeah, we're pretty excited about that.
Yeah, meeting with changing from sole sourcing to multiple building suppliers helps quite immensely. Yeah,
good job. Yeah, thank you.
Okay, Tom.
Yeah, I'm sorry to interrupt. Did the first bidder bid again? What was his name?
You know, I don't recall who that low bidder was. No, actually, I have the agenda right here. I can go back.
Oh, yeah, we've got that. The minutes.
I'll tell you.
Because I wonder if they submitted the same bid, because I see one that's...
So instead of saying, I don't know, I think I have it right here. So I could see here. Southwest Construction and Property Management.
They did.
Yeah, they were on there at 1447 again.
That was
probably the same.
That
bid.
Was about the same amount last night. Yeah.
Okay.
It's good bringing these multiple agendas to a meeting.
Anything else? All right. Are we?
1447750.
Yep.
Same amount. Yeah.
Okay. Are we ready for take an action? Public comment. I didn't hear any more.
Right. I didn't know if we wanted to call for public comment.
Oh, public comment. Oh, I'm sorry. We have... Okay. Excuse me. Thank you. Now, do we have any...
I move that we award the construction contract for the maintenance facility modifications to Bueller Commercial and authorize the GM to execute the contract.
And I will second that.
Thank you. All those in favor...
Aye.
Any opposed? It passes.
Unanimous. Thank you.
Item 6. Construction Management Services Task Order with D Consultants. Jason?
Yes. So on most of our construction projects here at CMSA, our engineering staff handles all the construction management activities. There's only been a couple times in the past we've actually had... hired an outside firm to do overall construction management. That's when we did the major plant expansion. But what we did do is several years ago, we brought to the board an agreement with Isaac D., who is the owner of and the only employee of D Consultants, for more of a task order-based, you know, CM support services agreement. And that's kind of one form of the agreements that we use, where we establish the relationship with the agency, then we have just an hourly rate sheet for the different services that the person can provide, and that way if we need some support on construction inspection, you know, management, other aspects of CM, we can prepare a scope of work, bundle it to a task order. If that's within our signature authority, we execute it. If it exceeds that, we bring it to the board as a task order to get approved. Now, a little bit about Isaac D. Isaac D, you know, started his career with Harrison Associates back in the early 1980s, and one of his first jobs was working on the Central Marin Clean Water Grant Improvement Projects, which, you know, was the construction of CMSA, or outfall, the interceptors and pump station improvements and new pump station in the service area. And Isaac, his first job for Harris was actually watching the pile driving of all the piles at CMSA. And then after CMSA was built, there was a lot of work at pump stations for member agencies, and he was, you know, went out there and did some work. And then moving forward, you know, to 2007, when we had the construction contract for our facilities expansion, Isaac now at Harris was one of the owners, and he was, you know, an executive vice president, and he was the project director for Harris, and Harris was the CM for that big expansion program, which had a series of projects in it. So then Isaac, you know, retired. And we thought, well, geez, you know, so much about CMSA and how we do things in our facilities, it'd just be advantageous to us and Isaac. He told us he'd like to do it too. That he provides some support services, you know, as needed over time to supplement our staff, kind of as an extension to staff. So we brought that agreement to the board. You guys approved it. And the last time that we worked with Isaac under a task order for that particular agreement was for the chemical storage building project that Commissioners Gaffney and First, you know, toured, you know, a couple of years ago when we were remodeling that building. But Isaac's back from a major project over in Liberia that he was working on. And he's definitely interested in helping out with this project. And normally for a project of this you know, scale, our staff would handle it. But some of the inspection work is pretty specialized. We're used to working on, you know, reinforced concrete and pumping systems and piping, not really building remodel. But Isaac has a lot of experience with that, so we figured he could kind of oversee the construction work and train some of our, you know, engineering staff on some of the construction inspection and other specialty type of work associated with that type of construction. So this is a task order with a scope of work through that agreement. And Isaac's hourly rate is $115 an hour, which is pretty reasonable for, you know, construction management support services. So we're estimating, you know, 3 days a week, 8 hours a day for the construction contract duration of 200 something days. And that's about 772 hours, and you multiply it together, it's $88,000. Likely be less than that, but if it's more, I would let the board know. So we're recommending that you approve the task order number 4 with D Consultants.
All right.
For that scope of work.
Are there any questions or comments from the board?
Just a question. How long does this contract go for, this task order contract?
There's not a termination date, you know, on the agreement with D Consultants. It's kind of just ongoing. But any work he does under that contract has to be through a task order, which will have, you know, a scope of work, you know, a schedule if needed, and an hourly rate associated with it, and a total estimate, either a not to exceed estimate like this here, or broken down by a specific task or subtask.
Okay. Are there any questions or comments from the audience? I'll bring it back. Are there anything more?
Well, his fee for an experienced construction management guy is well below what we've seen, so it's very good fee. $115 an hour.
I remember what we used to pay back in 01, 02, 03 for inspectors of record. It was about $250 an hour.
Yeah. Well, let's not give
him
any ideas, guys.
Okay, never mind.
I would move to approve task order number 4 with D Consultants for Construction Management Services and authorize the general manager to execute the task order.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Item 7. This is PG&E Interconnection Agreement Modification Project Update. It's an informational item. Jason, take it from here.
Okay, thank you. So yeah, every few months, you know, we've given the board an update on the various activities that we've undertaken that once they're all wrapped up will allow us to deliver power to the utility grid. So I'll kind of go through a little summary of each of these items in the staff report. So last time that we gave you the update, which was in December, I told you how that, you know, PG&E, we engaged PG&E on modifying our interconnection agreement, and that we had failed the initial study, which was, you know, kind of a really high-level review of, you know, how delivering power from our, you know, 750-kilowatt generator could potentially impact their, you know, their system. And there were like 12, you know, different screening elements, and we failed 4 of them. So because of that, we had a decision at that point in time, do we do a supplemental review or a system impact study? We decided to go with the supplemental review, which was, you know, had a duration of 2 months and about $1,200 versus the impact study, which was about, you know, I think it was, you know, $20,000 and could take up to 6 months. So we did that, and PG&E completed the supplemental review, and it was good results. We passed it, so we were happy about that. But they did identify about $75,000 of improvements to their system that we would need to pay for as part of the interconnection agreement process. And those, there's this really two improvements. One is adding some remote monitoring through SCADA of a protective device. Maybe the name of it, a recloser relay out in their system, and then doing some modifications to the ground fault detection bank, which is by the switchgear on our site. Then there's some fee for them just doing, you know, inspection of all the work. So that's good news. You know, we are thinking, you know, potentially it could be a lot more than that amount of money. So probably in the next, within the next couple months, we'll have the final draft interconnection agreement, you know, for the board for review, comment, consideration, approval. Our energy consultant has reviewed different drafts of the agreement with their electrical staff. They provide comments to PG&E, so it's getting, it's working its way through that, that process right now. But it's looking pretty good, according to the energy consultant, Mike Brown, who you guys met back in, I think, July of last year. So that, that's all great. And then there's these, so for us to deliver power, we need to have our power certified by the California Energy Commission as renewable energy. So we've applied, you know, for that certification. They've reviewed the application. They've accepted it. They said it looks good. But they said, you know, before we give you that certification, you have to have an interconnection agreement, you know, with PG&E to allow you to deliver power. And you have to be at the tail end of the process with a utility through your power sale agreement. So either Marine Clean Energy or PG&E. So we're kind of, that's on hold until we work through that, you know, energy sale agreement process. So that's good. Then, of course, we also have to have this Regis identification number, which is an independent, you know, energy management company that tracks how much renewable energy is being generated on, in the western United States, and they issue their renewable energy credits for that energy also, if it's renewable. So they've accepted our application, but they said they can't actually give us the official number until we have, what did I say, until we actually have the power sale agreement negotiated with, you know, one of the entities. But it's in process, so that's good. Then we've had, you know, continuing discussions based on board board direction, you know, a few months ago with Marine Clean Energy and with PG&E for the power sale agreement. And the status of that is the tariff program under Marine Clean Energy would buy our power for 10 cents a kilowatt hour, which is pretty good. And under PG&E's BioMAP program, and we think that we'll qualify for the BioMAP program because, as we talked about in the past, the generator was replaced through, you know, a contract back in 2013, which meets the requirements in the regulations. And the BioMAP pays 12.7 cents a kilowatt hour versus 10. But what we've learned through subsequent discussions with Marine Clean Energy is that, at least from a staff perspective, seems like it's going to be a lot more flexible working with them than working with PG&E in terms of, if, for example, if we had a contract with Marine Clean Energy, it would be a 20-year term. That's all they have. That'd be the rate. But they would buy whatever power we could deliver. So if, say, fog load started going to Novato Sand, so we had a drop in biogas production, energy production, they'd be fine with that. And say we didn't even, for a while, we couldn't even export any power. They'd be okay with that. With PG&E, you have to designate how much power you're going to deliver. And if you're outside plus or minus 30% of that, you might not get paid. So we're kind of, you know, we're still figuring that piece out. You know, so we have to. And then also Marine Clean Energy, there's discussion about, you know, buy all, sell all. So they would buy all the power at a certain rate, and we'd buy back what we need at a lower rate. So that's still an option with them. And they also have a program called dispatchability. Most of their power right now is generated by solar panels during the day, so they could use more power in the evening. So once we get to a point, you know, where we could store more biogas or energy self-sufficient, we could maybe stay with the gas and produce more power in the evening for them and get paid a little more. So there's options in the programs with them that we could just move in and out of during the term of the contract. With PG&E, it doesn't look like we have that flexibility. So that's kind of the status of our discussions right now. But, you know, the next few months we'll probably have, you know, a report to the board answering some of these questions that you're probably thinking right now based on what I told you.
Well, no, and options are being foreclosed at this point. Everything's still open.
Oh, yeah, yes, definitely. So that's kind of an update on that. Then the last topic to brief you on is the status of the state revolving fund loan that we applied for under the Green Project Reserve Program.
Can I ask a question about the energy transfer? Who owns, you mentioned renewable energy credits, and who owns those?
That's, so we would own those, but, you know, part of the negotiations, they may want to own those. So we're kind of figuring that part out there too. These are definitely a value for the recs.
Yeah. So what is the value of those now? Is there like a pay-as-you-go
kilowatt-hour? It's based on that, so many cents a kilowatt-hour, but I'm not quite sure what the value is. But when we bring it back, when we come back to the board, that'll be one of those many things that we'll hopefully answer to help you guys kind of guide you to make a decision on which a utility to select, and of course to fine-tune the negotiations and bring that a contract back to the board after that.
Thank you.
So that'll be probably the next few months.
So CWSRF.
Yeah. So, you know, we applied for that back in September, and, you know, we had this plan of study, which was part of the application package. And what we did is, in that plan of study, we took, you know, a variety of the tasks from the interconnection agreement project, put them in the plan of study, and then we have this 2017 master plan work that has like 12 tasks in it. We took several of those tasks and incorporated into the plan of study, as well as some financial analysis and some, you know, environmental documentation and reports and all that. So the plan of study had a value of about $630,000. And at the time, we thought, well, this is great. You know, the application is pretty small. It's not a construction, you know, loan application. So we thought we should probably get some feedback pretty soon. So we submitted, and we were happy, you know, within a short period of time, we were assigned a project manager for it. He got back to us and let us know, hey, the application looks complete. We're going to move through the process. So we were pretty excited about that. And then, you know, weeks and months kind of went on, and our engineering staff was pretty diligent about keep contacting, you know, the folks at the State Revolving Loan Program. And they'd always call back and say, well, we're reviewing it. It's moved along. It's looking good. Then I think in December I told you that, you know, it had been approved by the project manager. His boss approved it. And there were some other folks that needed to approve it, a whole group of them. We didn't know all the different people, what levels. So we're all, okay, so it's going to take a little bit of time. But what we're sure about is, of all those dollars, do we have to have the application approved before we can before we start the clock where we can get, you know, reimbursement for those activities? Or is it retroactive? These are some things that we just had to start, you know, to move some of these activities forward, like the negotiations with PG and the interconnection agreement. So we're not quite sure if there's going to be a reimbursement component. They haven't, you know, committed to reimbursing us for things that are already started and we've incurred costs, you know, before the application is approved. So we're asking that question, but they're not saying no, they're not saying yes, and there's nothing in their program documentation on the web that answers that question. But what we have done is, because of the JPA agencies not needing, you know, revenue information from CMSA for any Proposition 218, you know, rate adjustment processes for fiscal year 18, we've then pushed, you know, our revenue plan development, you know, into this fall, and then a decision, you know, late winter of next year, probably like, you know, February, March of 2018. So because of that, we're able to delay several of the tasks in the master plan because we just don't need to get that information yet to revise the capital and talk with the finance committee and the board about things we want to do in the future that could have an effect on future agency revenues. So all the activities in the plan of study that are in the master plan, we've delayed so we can get full reimbursement once the application is approved. And Crowell Engineers, who's, you know, is working on the master plan, they were fine with doing that. So that's really all I have on the. It's moving forward. Oh, another thing to tell you, which was good news actually, is so I'm at that DC CASA conference, and I'm kind of lamenting to some of my colleagues there about this loan process, how long it's taking. Like, geez, it's been 6 months. What's going on? And a couple of them say, "Wow, that's great. I mean, you've actually got a response from the State Water Board." we submitted applications for the same planning grant under the same program in July and August, and they're not even returning our calls. And you went in September, and they're calling you back, and you have a project manager, and they said that certain things have been approved. So I felt a lot better coming back from D.C. Okay. So I'm smiling now instead of being grumpy about it. But it's all moving forward.
Yes, question.
You know, what you might do, Jason, is find out if they've awarded any of these, and then talk to the agency, did they go retroactive or not?
Well, you know, that is great advice.
Get so much information from people that have done it before.
I'm sure that's probably on their website, who they've, you know,
created. You probably know all the people they've given it to, so.
Good point.
Okay, yeah, we'll definitely do that, and I'll let you know next month in my oral report.
Okay.
But are they? I hope they're funding these. You know how they promised some local agency or state revolving fund loans, and then crapped out on them. So this is a different program. But still.
Yeah, yeah. This is a different program with a different funding source, and the criteria for the program are much more limited than just the standard, you know, wastewater collection treatment systems or the SF loan program. Where SAC Regional will receive a $1.6 billion loan. Recycling all the money there, that's why. Sausalito and Las Colinas didn't get their loans.
Trump takes all the money out of the program.
Okay,
now,
come on.
Yeah.
Did you have a question?
No.
Do we need to do anything on this item?
We don't need it, actually.
Just information.
Okay. So, Jason, you had some... you had an oral report. You want to share? There we are. North Bay Watershed. Do we have a North Bay Watershed report? Yes.
We're going to cover two of them. The February one, they had a lady come in who was talking about groundwater management in Sonoma County. And the good news is that, especially with all of our current rains, is that the reservoirs all look terrific. But the aquifers in Sonoma County also look terrific. They don't even worry about Marin County. We look terrific all over the place. The Central Valley, the aquifers are still massively in trouble. But if we get a few years of rain and... A lot of what's happening now is the IP, indirect potable reuse, where they're actually taking water and instead of just sending it out to the ocean, trying to force it back into the aquifers. And given a bunch of years of good rainfall, we may start to recover a little bit from that. And so that was very interesting. Took a vote because they wanted to send the letter to the State Water Resources Control Board because there's some question about with the pipelines that they want to put from the Delta down to Southern California underneath the bay. It really has nothing to do with us technically, but we have concerns about what they're doing with Delta Water. So there was some discussion about whether we should even be putting our noses into that information. And it was felt all over the place that whether or not it's technically our issue, that we had the reasonable responsibility to together send a letter expressing the North Bay Watershed Association thoughts about the whole thing. So we did that. And so that was really February. March was really interesting because we talked about Bothan Marsh marsh restoration, if you don't know where that is.
Oh, Bothan Marsh.
Marsh restoration. That's the area next to the bike path in Mill Valley by the sanitary district there. That whole marsh area that goes out to... Sausalito there. It's getting more dire every year with sea level rise is already causing a problem in the whole area. And they showed some pictures in a few years what could be happening with the Tam Valley, and they're going to be very, very unhappy in the Tam Valley area. Because it's going to be underwater. And so...
Yeah, well, that Manzanita parking lot's a good demonstration model.
Yeah, Manzanita parking lot. And the other area that they don't even talk about is the office building.
Yeah,
that's
shoreline.
building that's there, which is underwater every single time people can't get to their offices.
Yeah.
They had Roger Leventhal from Marin County... came and gave a long talk, and it was really, really interesting. about they're doing a demonstration project down there, where they want to do a demonstration project, but getting permission from the Army Corps and everybody to be digging around in a marsh is really, really difficult. But they have the plan for what they want to do. And the different approaches that they take are really kind of interesting. They have the brute force approach, which is you can just put up a dike and hope for the best, which is expensive and you don't know whether it's going to work. Or if you start doing it now, there are ways of doing it so that you can help Mother Nature along by putting up different barriers in different places. And then when the silt comes down, it gets stuck there and builds up the marsh naturally in a way that's very good. And so that was really interesting. And they better get started because Tam Valley is going to be underwater
like yesterday.
Soon. Yeah. And so they're looking for the money and the funds to do that and how to do such a thing. They're also coming up trying to plan for the annual meeting or biannual meeting of the North Bay Watershed Association and what to discuss there. And so there was a lot of discussion about where to hold it.
Well, that'll be in 18. That'll be in 18.
That'll be in 18, yeah.
Because we just had one not that long ago. Yeah.
And so people got very excited about that.
Excellent.
So that was it.
All right.
I'd also like to introduce the world-famous Ross Valley Sanitary District business manager, Felicia.
Oh, hi. Nice.
Hi.
That's why the member of the public that looks district. Like sitting in your audience is actually not making any comments on your agenda.
Anyway, as part of the New York, we have a business manager.
Excellent. Welcome.
Nice to be here. Thank you very much.
So, any other oral reports by commissioners before we have our GM give his? GM.
Okay. So you see, here's a handout with a lot of good information on it. Just a few things I'll point out. One is, you know, that wastewater fact-finding trip that I went on with Chris Vinton to Denmark. Mm-hmm. That was an amazing time. We toured, you know, wastewater plants there, a lot of factories and facilities. It was a schedule from 7:30 in the morning till 6:00 at night. I mean, we were real busy. Didn't get a tour at all and see things really. But we're going to have a presentation for the board. We took lots of photos next month, so we'll give you a good update there and stuff. But there's a few things that we learned there that we're definitely going to be implementing here at CMSA, and that we'll be including those in our fiscal year 18 business plan that we'll bring to the board in July. Second thing is, and this is something I just really don't like to talk about, but we did have a permit exceedance. It's been, you know, over 12 years since that's happened. And this particular exceedance wasn't a water quality exceedance in terms of, you know, the quality of what we send to the bay and impacts to the environment. It was it's a provision. It was associated with a provision in our permit that says we have to remove 85% of everything that comes in. And one of the constituents that comes in is organic material. And it says you have to remove 85% of that between the influence of the plants and what goes out to the San Francisco Bay. And normally, we don't have any problem meeting that, you know, that limit. And it's based on concentration. So you measure concentration coming in, concentration coming out, not necessarily the mass of material coming in and what's leaving, which, you know, we thought was a little odd. But what happened during, you know, some of the major rain events, the influent to the wastewater plant is extremely dilute. For example, during most of the year, we might have a BOD number of, you know, 400. Well, during the major rain event, it was around 50, you know, low 50s. So pretty dilute. And then during some of these events, we're blending for well over 24 hours. So the main process that removes the BOD is a secondary system. So we're blending around that. We're not removing the BOD in that primary effluent that's being routed around that. So some's removing the primaries. Almost everything's moving the secondaries. But when you have, say, 80 million gallons coming in for 24 hours, only 30 is going through the secondaries, then you have 50 with, you know, full BOD going around. So you can look at, you know, one of the process reports shows, you know, the BOD figure, and you correlate to the high rainfall. So we are, you know, around 82-83% your removal. So it was like 50, and one of the not really a problem, but one of the issues was that we don't, our permit only requires us to grab one of those BOD samples once a week on the influent and effluent. So there's only four a month. So if it turns out that the timing of that is when a big storm comes in, there's potential to have the dilute influent and the extended, you know, blending in the reduced BOD removal, so higher BOD on the effluent. So what we've decided internally is that we're going to provide more sampling that's in the permit, probably like 3 days a week. So that way, during the wintertime, if one of those set sampling schedule events is when there's a major storm event, well, there's 11 other, you know, samples during the month that you could bring that average into, you know, what you're... And that's actually a little better, too, because you have a better representation of the water quality during the month than just those four specific dates. So this August, we'll be receiving our Platinum 12 Peak Performance Award for 2016, but it'll be a long time before we receive another Platinum
I'll
Award.
I'll get some black ribbon across the plaques up there.
Is there any way to appeal this with your the fine job you've been doing and to get these low levels in? And is the effluent based on that 50 or... So you had to go 85% of 50?
It has to be. It's over the course of the month. So we have the four samples, and you look at the removal of each of those samples and average it out, and it has to be greater than 85%. And because of that, primarily because of that one event, which was a very low percent removal, it affected, you know, all the samples.
All the numbers,
yeah. And the Regional Water Board, you know, they, if it's a clear, you know, I hate to say it, a violation of the permit, is black and white in the permit, they're going to look at that and say, well, you know, here's your data. Your data supports that you violated the permit. And,
yeah, is there going to be any repercussion from the regional board? I mean, do we expect anything?
Well, this isn't qualified. It's not categorized as a serious violation. So there's no monetary penalty. So we'll report it to them. It'll be in our self-monitoring report narrative. It'll be posted on the state's electronic reporting system. But I don't think there's going to be any, like, you know, penalties for the Regional Water Board. It's just unfortunate that it happened. You know, our staff's, you know, really, you know, really disappointed about it, but we realize that it has nothing to do with our facilities, how it was operated, or anything that staff was doing at the time. It was just I&I, mm-hmm. having to blend for an extended period of time and all those other factors. Mark knows this much better than I do. Mark, is that accurate how I explain
yes.
that? Okay, thanks.
Perhaps we can produce an alternative fact.
is there any basis for arguing that particular measurement was so extreme and so unusual that it shouldn't be included?
Well, I mean, Mark, what do you think?
Generally, they're not... willing to exclude a data point that has been defined as acceptable in that it was monitored correctly, results are accurate, and although we will definitely put in our self-monitoring report that this is not typical, the flows, I mean, we've had been in a drought season over the last 5 years, so this is not typical flows, so it should not be considered a serious event. Unfortunately, I can't see the regional board excluding it from the data set.
Okay. Thank you.
Well, it wasn't even a typical flow historically, period. Forget the drought. It exceeded everything because it was so extreme. So, but still, you know, you pick up, pull up your big girl pants, and move on.
Question. Surely this affected other sanitary agencies, wastewater treatment plants.
That have I&I.
Do other plants simply report these kinds of issues, or do they simply change the day that they choose to do the sampling?
Well, I can't answer that the way you framed it, but I can say that other facilities that when they have overflows, if they report those, if they have permit exceedances, they report those. I'm just not familiar. People adjust, you know, sampling schedules based on, you know, that type of event. like, well, you know, we have a set sampling schedule for all of our analyses. You know, our staff goes out and they do the samples for the schedule. And sometimes we make adjustments. So if we know there's a big construction project happening and that we have to do a diversion around this process because of that, we might adjust the sampling schedule because we have to accommodate the contractor. But when it's, for example, when it's a weather event and it's starting to happen, we generally don't say, well, you know, let's sample when the event's
over.
It's
raining, let's not go out.
because if you did that, you know, and someone like called you on it, you'd have a hard time explaining, mm-hmm. we're doing it per the schedule, then we changed it here because of this. It'd be problematic trying to explain why you do that.
They're submitted under, they certify, don't you certify that somebody does, and under threat of perjury if they lie.
We don't want to. I just would hope that, you know, all the other agencies are honest about that and don't.
We assume they are. Change. Yeah, yeah.
Thank you.
I'm familiar with a lot of them, and I think they religiously do what we do at CNSA. I'm pretty sure of that.
But having the multiple samples now, well beyond what's in the permit, will be helpful.
An interesting side effect of these rains, aside from we get some good rains, is that, at least in RVSD, with our smart cover technology, we're discovering big time where our large sources of INI are coming from, and they're fixable pretty easily. And for instance, on San Anselmo Avenue, we've discovered an 18-inch pipe going directly from the creek into our sewer lines. Rainwater from the creek shooting high pressure directly into our lines, which is causing a tremendous amount of our INI, and that's fixable. And it's been there for years and years and years and years, and we don't normally get that high to where anybody would have noticed. And before this, we've had no way of monitoring it, but we know exactly where the water is coming from and how to fix it at this point. Kent Woodlands, the downspouts.
Oh, you talked about that last month, or January,
You know, we're really beginning to attack this in a way that we've not been able to do, not done before. Tom, the other day, was noticing over at the College Marin that it appears that there's many downspouts.
Connected to the storm sewer.
It seems.
Sanitary sewer.
Redwood High School. Which has, I believe, their own collection system, which feeds into ours, also has some fresh water coming into the system.
Well, Redwood has an unusual situation because in the east parking lot they actually have a storage vault because of the fact that the high creek and the high rainfall caused the parking lots to go underwater, and so part of the facility's modernization effort back in the late 90s, early 2000s, included some modifications to the gates, the storm gates, and the vaults, and so forth. It's a very complex system.
Back in the day when we all had cheap cars at Redwood High School, it didn't matter. Now that they're driving Teslas and BMWs.
Yeah, and
that
ain't the teachers.
But we're this has enabled us to really to see where we're having the large amounts of INI. So we're hopeful that in the future we can help to prevent these blending events from happening by preventing the freshwater and stormwater from getting into our system.
Excellent. Yeah. All right. So, do you have anything else to report?
We did receive a notification today from the California Water Environment Association that we received, you know, several state-level awards for, you know, the agency and for some of our staff. Some were first-place awards through third-place awards. So I'll probably be bringing that to the board, you know, at the April meeting as an information item.
All right.
The last thing I'll mention here is that the San Rafael Sand District Board, they discussed the JPA revisions, and they appointed, you know, Commissioner Pushy as their representative to a JPA review committee.
I did not run fast enough.
All right.
Ross Valley discussed it too, and we're probably going to appoint somebody next meeting.
Okay, great.
I would guess I'd be the one for Court of Madera.
That's all I have.
Does Larkspur appoint someone?
I sent Dan Schwartz a follow-up email, just checking in to see if he was going to bring that to his council. You know, the GP revision and the things that we looked at the January meeting. Let's see if the council wants to appoint somebody to the committee.
All right. Our next scheduled meeting is April 11th, Tuesday, 7 p.m. here. Mary Beth, did we meet the criteria?
You absolutely did meet the criteria, but I was remiss in my delay. I was unable to present the new alternate from San Rafael San, Dean DiGiovanni.
Dean, not Doug.
Not Doug.
I was doing this fast, you know. Yes. sorry, Dean.
So Dean has been appointed as an alternate for San Rafael San. It is expected that pending Al's return, we will be seeing a lot of Dean. So thank you. I met with Jason, and thank you for making him feel so welcome again.
Oh, yeah, definitely. We had a great conversation a couple weeks ago.
All right. Well, I think that I'll entertain a motion for adjournment.
So moved.
Second.
All those in favor of
going
home. All right. Thank you.
That's good.
Thank you for
accommodating the schedule.
Excellent. We kind of liked it.